Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's EvaLynne, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. So welcome, listeners, to Autistic Voices with me, Evelyn Charmer, my Autistic Voice of the Week. I'm speaking to over in Ireland is a lovely guy by the name of Sylvain Ruthenberg. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Evelyn, for having me. Very excited to be here today.
Oh, really exciting. I know we've been waiting a while to get together to record the interview. So really glad we've finally got the time to do that. And we'll get into why in a little while, but I always start the show with something we're grateful for, and a bit of a shameless plug on my part, because I'm really grateful this week to the Yorkshire Prestige Awards, which looks at businesses, and the past few years they look at small businesses as well, and I've won an award this year for Children's Holistic Therapy Clinic of the Year.
Wow.
For my work as a therapist with Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited. So that's what I'm particularly grateful for.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your award.
Thank you.
What am I grateful for? This week, I'd say, since I had off, grateful for being able to sleep in, just rest up. My best friend's birthday, it was on Thursday, so I spent his birthday with him. We went out for dinner. We've known each other for a very long time, so it's just always good to hang out and be ourselves, which we all know as statistics is not always as easy. But since we've known each other such a long time, it's just good to be me, and literally take all the masks off and enjoy, really.
Oh, that's great, isn't it? When you can do that and you're with someone who you feel comfortable enough to do that. If you can hear noises in the background, listeners, my dog is kind of shaking and moving around. So apologies for that. Okay. So, Sylvain, you describe yourself as, and now I love this, an adaptive autist and ADHDer. So, first of all, tell us a bit about that.
So the adaptive autist, I came up quite a while ago, because most of the times when you read about autistics or people with autism, whichever one prefers, it always says that we are very prone to have strict routines, and we have a hard time adapting and getting out of those routines, etc., etc. And if I've understood one thing by now, with having interacted with a lot of other autistics in my community, that's far from the truth. It's like the complete opposite. It's like having to manage and live your life in the neurotypical world requires constant adapting, constantly to be able to adapt to change. And so I kind of wanted to break with that stigma. And secondly, because I have ADHD, my brain sometimes does the complete opposite. So I have to adapt to my own brain most days anyway. And so it sparks a lot of questions It's a bit provocative, but that's really also the key point of it. When I talk about provoking people, it's not to upset them, rather than giving them an impulse to think and reflect and take a different perspective on things, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly why I wanted you on the show, is because this show is about sort of myth busting and challenging misconceptions and stereotypes. And I'm not averse to people having those misconceptions and stereotypes, because it's not deliberate that people have them. It's from the lack of information and a lack of voices out there, and a lack of media presence, I think, which is definitely growing. So I'm quite excited about that. So provoking people to think differently is what you're talking about.
Yes, it's
And adaptive autism, I mean, yeah, I think it's interesting that we even feel the need to use the words together, because people do assume, a lot of people anyway, let's not us generalize now, but a lot of people do assume that as an autistic person, your ability to adapt, to be flexible, is quite challenging. Yeah. So give us a bit of an example of, you were saying about sometimes you have to challenge your own brain.
So I think the best example that I give, which I had to learn to use both sides of my brain, so to speak, is I have ADHD and I have an excessively terrible spatial memory, i.e. I'm the kind of person that loses his house keys or whichever item you most need when you leave the house. And for me, for a long time, it was always just running around like everyone else, 2 hours looking for my key, not finding it, and then eventually finding it right in front of my nose. And so I knew about my ADHD first, and then my being autistic, I only found out last year. So nowadays, the adaptation is really misplacing the house key, and then because I have an extremely good visual memory, just basically rewinding the movie in my head to the last point that I had the key in my hand, walking over to that location and usually finding it there. So that's me having to adapt, or I can't be overly orderly for a long time. So I can clean up my room. I'm very tidy, but then eventually I have those moments when I'm like very focused and not paying attention, and then, well, my room's gonna end up a bit chaotic. So for a long time, I tried to be like, put my socks together, like do everything neatly and tidily. And then eventually ended up saying, okay, this is not going to work. So let's just not do it. So I just adapted my wardrobe so it would fit my needs. So I would unfold my shirts. They're all on hangers, for instance, just so it gives me the opportunity to be a bit more orderly without having to make the effort. So that's like two examples of how I have to adapt to myself.
Yeah, fantastic. And you also describe yourself as an innovator and a strategist. So do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
So strategy is it's this is largely business focused in on one hand. What I try to do when I talk about innovation and strategy is society adapting, changing society so it is suitable for everyone. And then also for me, because I work in a multinational myself, finding ways and pathways to get my community into the mainstream work life, so to speak, because a lot of them don't even have a job. And then that's showing that will be a pool of innovation, and that in itself will advance not only society but the company. And after all, companies still want to make money, so they need to understand that they have to invest, but there's also going to be a return, not only financially but also socially.
Yeah, and it's an issue that comes up a lot on this show, not surprisingly, is employment and diversity in the workplace and true inclusion and that kind of thing. And I know you work as an account director. Yeah.
Correct.
So You talked a minute ago, you mentioned that you were diagnosed ADHD first, and that was, I believe that was in 2018.
Correct. That was at the end of 2018, December, to be correct.
Yes. So, again, diagnosed with that as an adult, not through school or anything.
Correct.
So just tell us a bit about your journey then from that sort of diagnosis through to your autism diagnosis last year and then now, up to now.
So, when I got my ADHD diagnosis, I was actually still living in Switzerland. I was working in a bank. 2018 for me was a very turbulent year, let's say. There were a lot of things coming together, and apparently that had some imbalanced my brain to an extent that I was studying at that time remotely, and I had already done 1 year, and it was completely fine. And I was sitting down to study, and I wouldn't be able to read 2 pages of a book and remember a single word. Whereas I'm hyperlexic, so usually for me, reading 100 pages of a book would cost me an hour, and I would still remember everything, or most of it, anyways. And it just didn't work, and so I went to a therapist, started taking medication, then moved from Switzerland to Ireland, for LinkedIn for my current job, and started doing coaching with an ADHD coach. So that got me a lot of value in terms of self-awareness, how to find my triggers, et cetera, et cetera. And then COVID hit. And unfortunately COVID hit me too. So I ended up having long COVID. I ran around with it for almost a year without even knowing. I guess that had in part to do with my neurodivergency and being able to just ignore a lot of things. And then I got, I wasn't very well. And on a day that I had to go to a new psychiatrist because my old one retired to get my medication for my ADHD meds, I wasn't really having a good day. So work wasn't great. I had to spend a lot of money just to get my pills. Went in there with a very grumpy mood. And I always jokingly say I was like a textbook autist that day. I looked at the wall. I didn't speak to him. It was very monotone voice, like everything you would find in the DRM probably. And we spoke for an hour, and then he gave me my prescription, and then he said, "Oh, by the way, not only do you have ADHD, but you're autistic." And at that time, I was like, "Yeah, whatever. I don't care." I really didn't at that moment, and then my health situation deteriorated with, and then I kind of started looking into it. I actually, for the first time, read the report he had written, and I recognized myself a lot in that report. And so that's when I started putting things together, looking back, looking forward. And that's basically how I ended up here. I am in the sense of, I disclosed my neurodiversity to my employer in December. And I also realized I got a lot of good feedback, but I also realized there was a lot of not knowing about a lot of things, not understanding. And so for me, I was really then saying, okay, I am in a position where I can talk because I'm disclosed, I'm open about it. And so I started doing that, and that's how I kind of also started being an advocate at some point. And then by pure chance, when I started doing some advocacy work, and posting stuff on LinkedIn, I got connected with a lot of well-known autistic advocates, such as Sienna Castellón, for instance, Charlotte Wehler. And that's also, I think we're going to talk about this a bit later, where we did some events together, all around, just talking about autistic people, autistic voices. Was basically an event run from by artists, and it was just all autistic panelists.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that after the break now that you've introduced it so beautifully. So we're going to listen to one of your chosen songs because I know another thing that's really helped you and you're very passionate about is meditation.
It is indeed.
So you've chosen for one of your chosen songs, one of your favorite meditation songs. It's Parallel Six Quartet.
Quartet.
Yes.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back, listeners, to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. You're listening to me, Evelyn Charmer, and I'm speaking with Sylvain Ruthenberg today, who's based in Ireland. So welcome back, Sylvain.
Thanks so much.
So just before the break, you mentioned that you got involved with doing a bit of work, advocacy work, really, and speaking and events with some other autistic voices, autistic coaches that you'd met through LinkedIn. So I know that you spoke at one particular event called Thinking Differently About Autism and Masking. So tell us a bit about that.
So Thinking Differently About Autism was really a last minute event. I had connected with Sienna, I think, a few weeks prior, because she ran the Neurodiversity Celebration Week, which was also a week long event with a lot of panels and workshops, etc. And she was invited, or she used to be a UN ambassador for autistic voices, and they sort of had a falling out, and then she came up with the idea of creating her own event, and then she started reaching out to people, and she surprisingly enough to me reached out to me and was like, would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, of course. And so we ended up being, I think, almost 35 artists, and just put our head together, threw around ideas, and then created basically that global event that were five panels that span across five different time zones and then really hosting all autistic voices from all across the world. We had a woman from Pakistan, I think, South Africa, Australia, US, Germany, in my case, UK. It was a huge success, I feel. I love being part of the committee organizing the event, but also being able to share my story. So it was a very, very, very lovely experience for myself, I must say.
Yeah, it sounds quite validating and empowering experience to have quite soon into your diagnosis, I suppose, in terms of, it's quite a recent discovery for you. So that's really cool. Can listeners, is it available on demand anywhere or on YouTube? Can people tune into it?
It is on YouTube, so you would be able to find it in my project list on my LinkedIn profile. I think it's also still featured. If it's not, it's going to be featured again on my profile, so you'll be able to find it.
So if you're wanting to reach Sylvain on LinkedIn, it's Sylvain, S-I-L-V-A-N, Ruthenberg, R-U-T-H-E-N-B-E-R-G.
Exactly. Okay. Or what you can also do is just type in, if you're online on LinkedIn, you can also just type in linkedin.com/adaptiveartist, because I recently changed my URL. So you can also just find me via that.
Great. And you're also on Twitter, aren't you?
I am. Same handle, Adaptive Artist.
Adaptive Autist.
It's also linked on my LinkedIn profile. So if you can't find me directly, then you should be able to find me via the link as well.
So you were talking about the one event, Thinking Differently About Autism, mm-hmm. and then the second event, Masking, Hiding in Plain Sight. Where was that? What was that one?
That was hosted by Scott, who is disabled himself, and he also runs a podcast via CIC, All for Inclusion. And he had asked me whether I'd be interested in talking about masking or demasking, really, because we had spoken, or I had spoken on LinkedIn about it, And I also doing I think thinking differently about autism, it came up a lot. So it was for a while a very strong topic, and I said yes, definitely interested, because I feel it's very important for, especially for non-autistic people to understand what it means, what it is, and how it shows. And so I was very happy to be able to speak about it. So that podcast was really all about three people sharing their experiences later as a late diagnosed, and yeah, how we see masking, how it affects us, et cetera.
Yeah, well done, Scott. Because and Scott, if you're listening and you want to come on the show and talk about your podcast, you're more than welcome. There seems to be some really interesting stuff popping up now, podcast wise, and you know, and out there on social media in general, which is just so exciting. So yeah, if anybody else is listening who wants to come and talk about their stuff, please do get in touch with me via the show or also on LinkedIn at UK Health Radio. Definitely working in going in the right direction, aren't we? Which is really, really good. So you've been diagnosed at a really exciting time for neurodivergence, Sylvan. So welcome to the tribe, really. You just touched on it, that fact that you've worked as an interpreter, and I know you did that many years, didn't you?
Yes, I'd say in the beginning more than towards the end, because towards the end I was more in the business consulting part, but I would still do it. So my initial career path would have been something completely different, but because of health reasons, I had to skip that part really. I used to be an acrobat and martial artist and wanted to go more on the creative side really.
Well, you've thrown that in because I wasn't aware that you used to be an acrobat. That's.
It's something I don't often talk about, because it's for me it's still like a smiling and a crying eye really, because it was I had a spine injury that basically and then did it for quite a while until I realized, okay, translation is not that much fun because you have computer assistant programs that help you with that. So I focused a bit more on the interpreter part. So I didn't do simultaneous interpretation rather than consecutive. So one would speak a few words, a few sentences, I would translate, vice versa. And that's also how I got basically connected with a lot of people within companies, and then started doing business consulting, which was a lot of project work where it was all around problem solving, being creative, being thinking outside the box, which I was really good at. Just at that time, I didn't know why. That's the key that I found out last year, I guess, or over the past 3 years, really.
Starts to sort of things start to make a bit more sense, don't they? But it sounds like you've experienced that creativity in lots of different ways, and you've explored it in lots of different ways. Languages are incredibly creative. You need that creative mind to be able to adapt to four different languages and start learning a foreign language age, which was, you said, age six. What was the first language you learned at six?
Spanish, actually.
Spanish. Yeah. So now you speak German, English, Spanish and French. Yeah.
And Brazilian Portuguese, although that is not as good as the other languages because that's the last language I learned. But I am actually now at the point that I want to learn two more languages.
Wow.
I haven't fully focused on the second one, but one of the languages will be Hebrew.
Wow.
Just because it's a very old language.
Yeah.
I find the way that they write very interesting. And yeah, can't really tell you why. It's like something that tells me I
You
should be.
just want, yeah, and that's it. It's a burning desire, and I think it's amazing. I mean, let me know how you get on with that, because I can't even imagine. I loved languages at school as well, and now I know why, but I can't even imagine how you approach learning something so alien, a language as Hebrew. So that's really intrigued my curiosity.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, listeners, to Autistic Voices. I hope you enjoyed the piano boys there. Thank you for introducing me to them, actually, Sylvain, because it's not a group I've been aware of before. So tell us a bit about your passion for that kind of music.
So piano music, classic music is something, sometimes I'll use it for walking, focus work, or just walking down the street while everyone else is doing their thing and me with my earbuds. You will most of the time see me with earbuds in my head, in my ears, and just feeling like an alien, like you often do as an autistic person anyways, and just listen to the classic music and just see everything happening and unfolding around me. And it gives a very funny contrast, but it also refocuses my mind on different details. Like music's always been something that's been all around me. I use it for meditation. I use it for cleaning. I use it for work. I use it as a timer when I go, because I love taking very long showers and sometimes I don't have the time. So whenever I am short on time, I usually will play a song or a set of songs and I know exactly how long they take. So it kind of gives me the timing to when I need to switch out of the shower to get ready, to get dressed, and then be out the door by the time I have to.
So yes. Now you're a bit of a water baby as well, aren't you? I noticed on your, I think it was on your LinkedIn earlier today, a post about ice baths.
I am. So the ice bath part is something I used to do when I was very young as well. And I've recently, over the past few years, have started going back into it. Most of the times, it's an ice cold shower in the morning after having a very hot one, because I love hot showers. And if I need a stronger reset and I don't have the opportunity to go to the open sea, which I most of the times don't, because most people are too afraid of the cold, I just put a lot of ice cubes in my bathtub to fill it up with water, and then just sit in for 15, 20 minutes. And I make sure that at least for about 2 to 3 minutes, my head will be submerged in the water, because that's the part that really resets me, not only mentally, but also physically. It's like everything, my metabolism, my breathing, everything really improves. And it's very good for like the night after I do it, I sleep like a baby, really.
So what would your advice be to anyone out there who thinks, oh, I might try that? So you think, do people need to really get the okay from their GP, make sure that they've not got any issues that would mean that it wouldn't be safe for them to do so?
I'd probably say yes. If you know that you have health issues that might, I guess especially in around blood circulation, I'd be careful and say, okay, go to your GP. Generally, it's healthy for pretty much every person. But again, if you have health issues, go to your GP, ask him whether you can do it. And then it's really getting into it. It's a habit building. So I feel it's been out there from a lot of people as well. It's called the Wim Hof method.
Yes.
So what you do is you take your normal temperature shower, and then you start breathing quickly, like... and while doing that, you basically imagine that the water that you're currently, which is still warm at this stage, is starting to turn cold. Down to the temperature that you will have it eventually, and then start turning. And I usually do it in one go. Some people do it slower, but I just turn it ice cold in one go. But my mind already knows it's going to be cold. So it feels less cold and it's less shocking, really.
Yeah.
And then you start out with 30 seconds and then just start increasing from there, really.
And you said that you feel it gives you a physical and mental reset that you don't get anywhere else, really, including your metabolism, your mental health, your breathing, everything. Okay, so if people are interested in that, you can look up the Wim Hof method. There's been some stuff on TV about it. I think he did a documentary. And again, do take medical advice if you're thinking of getting involved in some sort of ice bath type scenario. And there are lots of people now, aren't there, doing wild water swimming. And I know lots of people who do lots of early morning cold sea swimming, cold river swimming, and stuff like that. So it's really gaining in popularity for health benefits.
It is.
And I'm over in the UK where we, you know, the Victorians, back in the Victorian era, they were big fans of spa towns, and the spa towns were seasides where they could get into the water. So it's an interesting one. Okay. Now, earlier on, you mentioned a little bit about your sort of move to Ireland for your job. You've worked as an interpreter. You know four languages. You're about to maybe think about studying another two. So I know that you've travelled quite a bit.
I have indeed. Yeah, my younger years, my 20s, I was jumping all around the globe, mostly for work, but then partially also because I just love travelling. So yeah, I'm fortunate enough that I visited countries in Asia such as Singapore, China, couple of African countries, Middle East, near Asia, US a lot. One of my favorite cities is New York. I admit it's my home away from home still.
Really? Gosh, it's a place I've been to Buffalo, New York. But I haven't been to the center of New York. My grown-up children keep telling me to go, but I'm a little bit city averse. I'm definitely a country girl. So the thought of getting on a flight to New York, not my bag, I don't think, but I'm told there's lots of space, and despite it being a busy city and everything else, that actually it doesn't feel compacted. It's quite peaceful and calm to walk around.
It is. It's just big. Very big. I'll be honest, I haven't been since the pandemic hit, so I just was told it has changed quite a bit since then. But before that, I would go as often as I would find the opportunity. I must say.
And apart from New York, where else in the world do you particularly enjoy visiting, or have you enjoyed traveling to?
I think for me, the most mesmerizing place was Jerusalem. I've only been once. I've also been to South America, so parts of Brazil are gorgeous as well. But the most mesmerizing place for me was probably Jerusalem, just because it's an extremely old city, and it literally feels, when you walk through the old town, for me at least, it felt literally like you could feel the energy of the old ages. And then I also was able to witness, because it was, I think, on a Saturday night, where at the Wall of Sorrow, where they were praying, and it was just, the energy was just, I can't describe it. I am someone, because I'm also doing meditation, a lot of energy work, like I probably am very sensitive to it. And for me, it was just, the energy was just, wow.
It sounds profound. It sounds very profound.
It was.
And I'm really drawn. I need to go before, you know, I get too old to do it. So it's on my bucket list for sure. And I did send you some information, didn't I? One of my previous guests, Alex Stratikis. If you're listening, Alex, hello. I don't know where you are in the world, but we must touch base. He is also autistic, and he's got a small funded program going on called Autism Adventures Abroad, where he's trying to help other autistics to access travel, you know, and find out and get tips about how to make that a bit easier and a bit easier to navigate and get around. So shout out to him. But also, I was wondering about yourself. You talked about a lot of your travel happening in your younger years. I'm assuming that was pre-diagnosis.
Yes, largely. I mean, my ADHD diagnosis was pretty much towards the last year, where I was still doing a lot of traveling. It has less to do with the fact that of the diagnosis, I feel, rather than because it was really the pandemic. And then
yes,
my personal aftermath that kind of prevented me from, going back to the regular, amount of traveling. I'm doing a bit more nowadays, but it's still like, yeah, It's different. And for me, it was also for a while, at least especially last year, was just because health-wise, it wouldn't be have been possible to travel. So like this year in summer was the first time in, I think, almost 2.5 years that I did a like actual relaxing vacation.
Yeah, good for you. And it sounds like the pandemic, the COVID really hit you hard and like it has done for so many people. So I'm glad you're on your path to recovery from that. And I hope that you continue to, improve health-wise. But I was just wondering, my last question to you really then, would you have preferred to have known earlier on in your life about your neurodivergence?
I get that. I think, I guess most neurodivergents get asked that question a lot. And sometimes I feel yes, most of the times I feel no. So for me is partially, I'm grateful that I didn't get the diagnosis when I was a kid because I'm German and I grew up in the 90s. And back then, ADHD and neurodiversity wasn't really a thing. So what would have most likely happened to me is that I would have ended up in some special school, and be most likely treated like someone who doesn't understand how to properly learn, et cetera, et cetera. And I was always very, very good at school. So on that end, I'm grateful that I didn't. When I get my ADHD diagnosis, I did have those moments, and I heard a lot of neurodivergent or late diagnosed have that looking back at situations and say, oh, if I had known, I would have acted differently. I would have been different, da, 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 da. And I had those moments as well. And then I realized that it wasn't going to help me because, first of all, it's past. And second of all, it was tearing me apart, really. And so I spoke to one of my mentors and he said, well, you know what? It's not bad to look back. But how about you take a different perspective on it and just instead of beating yourself up that things didn't work out the way you wanted to, look at those situations and see what you can learn from it. And that's basically what I did. So I went back into it and was like, okay, this is this, this is this. That's what triggered me. And that's also a large part, I guess, to through my ADHD coach, just looking at those situations, and look more at triggers, look more at behavioral patterns that you're comfortable or not comfortable with, and then start adjusting those. And with the autism diagnosis, or from I already had that mindset, so I was really just looking and picking out the cherries. Such as realizing, okay, that visual memory is something that I don't have to hide, quite the opposite, but just start actually using it. So for the first time, like with those with having the complete picture, as I say, about my neurodiversity, I feel for the first time I'm using my full brain. I'm still like far from where I feel I could be, but it's like just allowing myself to have that spiky profile really and really leaning into it.
I think that's brilliant and really good advice as well for people out there listening who might be struggling with this or might be wondering how to adapt to their newfound discovery of neurodivergence themselves or somebody they love and know, is to really, yeah, I love that. Embracing that spiky profile, leaning into it is great. And it does, I only found out last year too that I'm autistic and it's kind of I'm kind of going, oh, I can actually really utilize now. It's sharpened my focus, I suppose, on how my brain works and how I can really utilize that for the good of others and myself. And it's been a quite an eye-opener
It is,
and
yeah.
stuff I've maybe took for granted in the past or masked and thought, oh, that's a bit odd. No one else seems to be thinking like that. I'm now a bit like, well, that's because, we're all different. And I'm going to own it, and
Yeah.
I'm a lot more sort of comfortable in my own skin for me personally. So that's really good to hear you say that. So just remind our listeners then, Sylvain, of how they might find you on LinkedIn and or Twitter.
So yeah, finding me on LinkedIn is either typing in my name, so it's Sylvan, Silvan Ruthenberg, or you just type in linkedin.com/adaptiveartist. And my Twitter handle is also adaptive artist. So you should be able to find me. And I guess when the episode comes out, you'll be linking my profile for those who haven't been able to follow right now. So thanks so much, Evelyn.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. And yes, I shall be tagging you in the social media posts so that you can share it with anybody you like. This show goes out to people in 52 countries. So maybe we'll get you interpreting for us. That would be something. But no, I'm joking. But it goes out to 52 countries. So I'm sure there are people out there who are really interested in what you have to say today. So appreciate your time. And enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you so much, Evelyn. Thanks so much for having me, and have a good weekend as well.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.